matter what people say. Yeah. We got it going on. Yeah. Who cares about what they did?
You know me, I'm the hottest in the
game. WJMS, this is According to RP.
Turn up the volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beats,
spazzle,
to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are striving, thriving, and surviving in these corona-infested streets. So today, I have the very special Madam CEO herself, Jamie Bowles, with me from beginning to end. Say hello, Jamie.
Hello, audience.
It's very rare that I have my guests part of my preliminaries, so this should definitely be a treat. So I hope everyone has had an amazing weekend so far. Sundays are always very interesting as we are gearing up for the start of a new week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, not looking forward. I'm looking forward for Thanksgiving because I have Thanksgiving and the day after Thanksgiving off, and that's coming up in a couple of weeks. Well,
that's like next, not next week. It's the week after, right?
Yeah, the week after.
Oh, don't do that to me. I was like, oh, Thursday.
I got a Thursday and a Friday off that week, so I am looking forward to it. So,
yes.
November is one of the best months, you know, because you have Election Day off, you have Veterans Day off for the most part, you have Thanksgiving, and if you're lucky enough, the day after Thanksgiving off.
Got my birthday, my mom's birthday, Cancer Awareness Month, the list goes on.
My son's birthday, my mom's birthday, my aunt's birthday. I have a lot of Novembers too. Yeah. It's not the best month, it's not December, but it comes to a close second.
You like the back crust though. Like you like almost a November baby. Come on now.
but the Lord saw fit. He wanted to be in the same month of Jesus, you know? So
how can I compete with that? I have nothing for you.
You cannot compete with that. But you did say something important. Lung Cancer Awareness Month is in November.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. And we're going to be talking about that today. I know that it's a very important topic for you, obviously. And I don't know how many loyal, According to RP, listeners that we have listening today. But if they're loyal, they'll know that last year around this time, I think you were on and we talked about your lung cancer journey. Right.
Yep. I started hitting the airwaves pretty heavy in November. It's my month to really shine and talk. So I'm just like, I'll be on your podcast and your podcast and your podcast. I'm like all over the place.
I mean, because it's an important awareness, and I think that there's a lot of stigma around it. Right. A lot of people, when they think about lung cancer, they think about old smoker. Ate bad, like something like that. You know, they don't think about young, healthy, non-smoker. They don't think that. It's always a shock when they hear it. Like, are you sure you didn't smoke? Are you sure you weren't around smokers? There's always that idea, but you're here to tell us otherwise.
I am. And pause, time out real quick. You can edit this out later. Is this my part right here, or are you going to do preliminaries first and then we get into my part?
We're preliminaries, but you know what it is. We're always in and out, so we do a lot of in and out on this platform.
So I'm like, wait, should I start now? Should I wait?
Nah, girl, we got to do the preliminaries. We don't got to edit this out. The people know us. The people know our banter.
I wasn't sure.
We're giving them live. We're giving them a live feel, right?
Yes.
So before we get into the conversation of today, because that is what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about lung cancer awareness. We're going to talk about the stigma. We're going to talk a little about your journey, right? Not to, replicate last year's episode, but things change in a year, right? So talk about where you are now, some of the different things that you're doing. I mean, 1 year has passed since you talked about your whole journey. So
it's
I know the people... yeah, the people who have been tuning in, I'm sure they want to get the updates, right? They want to know what's going on, how you've been, what's been going on, what new things you've been into with respect to the awareness efforts, right? So we're going to get into all of that. But before we do, we have to get into our preliminaries. So without further ado, it is now time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
Popping on fleek, lit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week is you're fired.
Pretty appropriate.
Pretty appropriate. A term coined by Donald Trump on his show The Apprentice, even though bosses used it all the time before. Now, anyone who watched 5 minutes of it thinks it's the absolute shit and uses it to say you suck or loser or something of the sort. Examples, you're fired, you suck, loser. Now, you know how I feel about these Urban Dictionary words and phrases. Like, sometimes I'm just like, what is happening here? Who submitted this? Why was this even accepted by the Urban Dictionary people? And funny enough, the person who submitted this goes by the name of Jew Points. J-E-W Points.
That's a head scratcher. Like, what?
It is a head scratcher. It is a head scratcher. I mean, I would go on to say that this is not one of the better Urban Dictionary word or phrases that I have discussed on this platform over the course of the 2.5 years. However, I think you're fired is appropriate because that's exactly what we're saying to Donald J. Trump. He's fired. I think that they called it this week, like the official call that Biden is in fact the president, the 46th president. I think they double checked Georgia and Biden in fact won Georgia. Georgia is blue. No dispute here.
I'm taking credit for that. Georgia didn't turn blue till I moved here. Now all of a sudden Georgia blue. That's all me. Listen. I'm holding all credit.
It's all Jamie. And we salute
welcome,
you. You and Stacey Abrams, right? Because Stacey did a little work. She did a little work.
She did a little something.
Oh, boy. But that is the word or phrase. Nothing spectacular this week, guys, with Urban Dictionary, unfortunately. So we are now moving on to one of my favorite segments. It's the big up of the week, but this week it's really going to be a tribute of the week. So this week we're going to give the big up / tribute to Alex Trebek. I absolutely loved Jeopardy growing up. I loved it as an adult. I almost once a week make a Jeopardy reference. I'll always say, I'll take this for 600, Alex. Like,
or what is not the right answer? Yes,
exactly. Exactly. And it's one of those things, it's like, you know, we knew he was sick. I think he died from pancreatic cancer. So another # cancer sucks moment, right? It's, you know, it was inevitable. We know that pancreatic cancer is one of the most deadly forms of cancer. But it's still sad because I think everyone has a Jeopardy moment, right? Everyone at some point watched Jeopardy, whether you liked it or not, right? Immigrants came to this country and learned English because of Jeopardy. I mean, my parents didn't speak English, but Jeopardy was a favorite in the household. And it was just, I don't know, it's just going to be something that it's not going to be the same anymore, right? Watching Jeopardy and not, like, that's the phrase, right? I'll take 600, Alex. I'll take, you know, get out of my face for 500, Alex. You know, like, what are we going to say now? But
we can still say it, you know, and we can still say it, but it's just, it's different now. That's all.
It's different. Like, when I turn on the channel and it's not going to be him anymore, right? It's not going to be.
Supposedly, they tapped LeVar Burton to replace him, which I'm not upset about. I'm definitely not upset about. I like that. Like, Reading Rainbow needed to make a comeback. So
Reading Rainbow. I never knew his name was LeVar until a couple of years ago. His name was Mr. Reading Rainbow.
Wow.
Listen, immigrants have, and it's funny because I keep saying immigrants, but I was raised in a household of immigrants. So I have to, I guess I am also just by association, right? That's how I lived my life. But he was called Mr. Reading Rainbow. And then Mr. Rogers was called my neighbor. Like, my grandmother used to be like, oh, are you watching my neighbor? Is that my neighbor?
On the, like, no.
Mr. Rogers' name was my neighbor. That was his name.
That's
just
funny.
Like Mr. Reading Rainbow. So, I mean, I think he would be a great, great look. As long as it's not freaking Steve Harvey.
Please, no. Steve Harvey is done with, I'm done with Steve Harvey and game shows.
Or Ryan Seacrest.
Or what's it, Drew Carey?
Drew Carey. Those are like the three main people that they keep recycling over and over again.
Who took over The Price is Right when Bob Barker died?
Who did take over the? It's not Drew Carey? No.
Oh, maybe it was Drew Carey?
Yeah. It might be Drew Carey.
I think it was Drew Carey. I don't know.
I think it's Drew Carey, and I'm over it.
Yeah, but I definitely am going to miss Jeopardy. I know I used to watch Teen Jeopardy, and like I used to feel like a genius watching Teen Jeopardy because I'd be like, what is this, Alex?
Yep.
What is that, Alex? I was like, what's this from Alabama? What is the Montgomery, Alex? Like, it was crazy. I used to feel smart.
It's sad. But, you know, in doing more research on him, you know, whenever people die, that's when you get to really know who they were. Like, he really was like, you know, a pioneer in a sense in the movement as well, too, when it came to like Black people and things like that. So it was just really interesting to see how like down he truly was. You know, it wasn't just a front on Jeopardy, but he truly was like down with the brown, down with the cause. And I think I saw a clip of him talking about how he had an afro and he was tanned and they were like, oh, he's a brother.
I've never seen him have anything but white hair.
Yeah, this was like one of his like younger, you know, photos, and he was talking about that experience. And I think it was around the time, like, he was involved in something with the NAACP. I think he had donated or he was donating to the NAACP, but he was talking about how, you know, they saw him with an afro and dark skin and thought that he was a brother. They actually thought he was a brother.
He got inducted into the Negro by association.
Yes, yes, definitely. So definitely RIP to him. You'll definitely be missed.
Well, fun fact, if you want to continue to play Jeopardy, you can ask Alexa to play Jeopardy. If you go, you know, Alexa, play Jeopardy, you can actually play it. And he talks to you and does the whole thing. It's really cool.
See, here's the thing. I don't let the devil in my house. Alexa's not welcome.
I didn't either. I'm not with Alexa. I took me a long time to get Alexa, and I still have to like, I talked to her like she needs to know her, like, Alexa, mind your business, like, because I don't play that. Like, I'm not into the. I've seen enough robot movies to know this is not a good idea.
Listen, but Alexa's not welcome in this house. I don't think Alexa will ever be welcome in this house.
You might be able to get Siri. You might be able to be like, Siri, let's play Jeopardy and see what happens. Siri might play too.
Even Siri, I disable Siri because this big sister, big brother situation, although, I mean, we're on Zoom. I'm sure Big Brother is here with us. But even Siri, I try to disable Siri because Siri gets in people's businesses for no reason. Like, I didn't summons you, right? Like, why are you saying hello? Like, why are you?
I didn't send for you. I didn't send for you.
Yeah, like randomly, what is that? I didn't get that. Well, I wasn't talking to you, Siri.
And then Frank had the nerve to get a Roomba and name him Max. So now Maximus, like, he's got an app. So Max will just start vacuuming the house and stuff. And I'm like, you know, we're like one step away from the robots taking over, right? You know
that,
right?
Seriously. Like, you got to sleep with one eye open now.
Yeah, I'm like, you got Maximus, you got Alexa. I'm like, listen, no more robots. No more. They're outnumbering us. Like, we can't have more robots than humans.
So. Oh, man. All right. Well, I usually like segue is to say with every high, there is a low, but it's not a high. The tribute to Alex Trebek is not a high. It's actually a low. But to get even lower,
2020 has zero chill. Like,
no, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the positive thing, I guess, that happened was the fact that Biden has won the election and yes, we are rid of the orange bandit, right?
Not yet, but soon will be.
Soon. It can't come close enough. It can't come soon enough. But I guess going even lower, Pfizer, the vaccination, the vaccine, everybody and their mother is talking about it right now. Everybody and their mother is like low-key paranoid because nobody wants to take it. At least nobody that I know wants to take the vaccine. I think what made it even more, I don't know, crazy for me is how the New York State Bar, I don't remember her name, but she's like the head of like the health committee or the health division, basically made a recommendation that mandates every New York resident to take the vaccine. Like they have to take the vaccine. I don't know where she's going. She can kiss my ass with that one.
my whole ass.
both cheeks. Because, and then I think what made it even worse when I was reading further is the comment, like regardless of religion or philosophical ideology. So you know how there's a lot of vaccines, there's a lot of things that for religious reasons, right? If you have a religious basis for not taking a vaccine or for not getting a blood transfusion or whatever the case is, it's fine because it's based on religious grounds. This mandate takes it a step further to say, we don't care about your religion. We don't care about your philosophies and your ideologies. If you live in New York State, you are mandated to take this vaccine. And
so you know what's going to happen. I already know what's going to happen. They're going to try to mandate everyone to take the vaccine. And then 2-3 years down the line at 3 o'clock in the morning, when you're awake watching Happy Days reruns, you're going to get this quiet commercial in the background. Like, did you or somebody, you know, get the COVID-19 mm-hmm. vaccine and now you're experiencing X, Y, and Z? Mm-hmm. Call us now. You might be entitled to money. I bet you.
Class action against Pfizer, right? It's going to be a class action against Pfizer. I mean, yep. Listen, Pfizer's a pharmaceutical company. That's what they're in the business for, right? To make vaccines, make drugs, get us hooked, and do what they got to do. That's big pharma for you. So I'm not shocked that this happened, right? That's their job. Yeah. I saw that they claim 90% efficacy for the people that they tested it on. However, from what I understand, they only tested it on healthy individuals, not individuals with pre-existing conditions or anything like that. And I want to know, what is that 10%? If it's 90% effective, what's the 10%, right? What's going on
died.
There? You know what I mean? like, what's going on? And they're trying to push this. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, where is this? What is the 10%? Like, what's going on? You know, what's the negative side of it? And why are you not testing it on people that have pre-existing conditions, right? Like, what is happening here? So I'm nervous about it. I know personally, as for me and my house, we will not be taking the vaccine, but I am interested in seeing how forceful these quote unquote mandates are going to get. I heard that people who work in the medical field, like in the hospitals, will be the first to have to take it. I guess it's like, if you don't take it, then you can't work. So there's that.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So I don't know. So
I don't like it. I don't like it. I've seen it. Y'all didn't see the witches where they gave all them people the potion and the potion turned everybody into mice and stuff like that? y'all okay with taking stuff? All right, go ahead. Go ahead and sprout like noses and whatnot like mice. Go ahead and do it.
Yeah. It's crazy to me because they don't quite yet understand the coronavirus. They haven't figured it out per se. Like they still don't really know a lot about this virus and it keeps mutating. Right. So it's going to be like the flu shot where you have to take it every year, once or twice a year, because it's going to be a new strain. You can't give me one vaccine. It's not going to be good for 10 years. Like, you know, measles, mumps, rubella.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm concerned about it, but the womp womp of the week for me goes to, I don't remember her name, but the woman who recommended that New York State residents be forced to take this vaccine. I want to know what the or else is. Are you going to fine us? Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, what's the fine? Just give me the fine because I'm all set.
You know, like, just put it on my tab at this point. You know what I mean? Right,
like, tack it onto my ridiculous rent. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Anytime, like, you're forcing people to have to, like, take these vaccines, like...
Yeah.
It doesn't sit well with me. Like, I understand when you go to school, there's certain vaccines that the kids have to take. We understand those diseases, right? We have an understanding. Yeah. And then these vaccines have been around for like 50, 60, 70 years.
Exactly.
This coronavirus fiasco is like a different story. And so, I don't know.
I ain't all about it.
I'm not about it. But they get the womp womp of the week. Yeah. I'm like, you get the womp womp of the week. Don't you dare come with me with that needle.
Yeah, keep your mystery fluid to yourself. I'm all set.
Seriously. I'll take my chances. Thanks.
Which is scary to say because it's not a good thing. But
it's not a good chance to take. It really isn't.
It's not. But if given the two options, I'm going to take my chance with the coronavirus over a vaccine. Like, I don't know what's in that vaccine. I don't know how it's going to react with what I got going on. Like, I'm straight. I'm super straight.
Yeah. What if it has, it might have Clorox in it, right? Because it might have
That's
Lysol
why
in it.
Can't keep up with the demand. They got to give it all to the thing. To the vaccine
people, to Pfizer. Jesus Christ. Either way, now that we've gotten our preliminaries out of the way, Madam CEO. So for those of you who are now tuning in and have no idea who I keep calling Madam CEO, Jamie Bowles, she is the owner and operator of WJMS Radio, the lovely station that you guys are tuning into right now, and the lovely station that houses, according to RP, each and every Sunday. So... So she's here today and she is going to talk about lung cancer awareness as we are in November, which is Lung Cancer Awareness Month. And every month we know there's a million awarenesses, right? I know it's also Diabetes Awareness Month and it's Alzheimer's Awareness Month and things of that nature. But today we want to talk about lung cancer because it is something that is affecting young people. I think for the longest time, and even myself, you know, in health class, I could remember them talking about lung cancer and they're always associating it with people who smoke, people who are around smokers, people who are working on, like, I don't know, these mills where you're, you know, inhaling fumes. Like, there was always something around that, right? When we're talking about lung cancer, very rarely do you think about, you know, a 30-something-year-old person who's healthy, who exercises, who eats relatively healthy, possibly, maybe healthy.
I was working on it.
You were working on it at the time, right? Catching, you know, or not catching, but getting lung cancer. Like, that's not a thought. And even when I tell my friends that I have a friend who's, like, early 30s with lung cancer, the first thing they ask me is, does she smoke? I'm like, no, she doesn't smoke.
And then would it make you feel better if I did? Like, does that really make you feel any better? Like, oh yeah, she smoked a pill, she deserves it. Like, what?
You know what it is? I think that people would feel better because then it's like, oh, there's a reason why this young person got, you know, cancer, as opposed to, wait, if she didn't do anything to get it, does that mean that I can possibly get it? I think it makes them feel better when they can say, oh, you got to do something to get it. Ah, okay. I'm not doing that, so therefore I can't get it.
But well, that's not the case. What the thing is about it is the fact that, and I know this goes for most of the people that I talk to, as long as we can remember, it has literally been like there's a few solid marketing campaigns in the United States that are so good, people remember them no matter what. And people still follow them to this day. There's few things that people are like, you see it and it changes you and you never, like, you just don't go back. Like, one of those things is the American Cancer Society peddling it to us from day one that if you smoke cigarettes, you're going to get cancer. Mm-hmm. Or smoking is the reason for cancer. The other one that I always think about is the company that marketed the plastic rings that go around like soda cans, and how, mm-hmm, if you don't cut them up, little turtles get stuck in them. Now, I don't care who you are, I cut them little plastic things up and people will yell at you like, you didn't cut the plastic thing up, you're going to throw, mm-hmm, that up. Like, people really get angry. And it's just like, it's one of those things. And the other one is, I always think of Final Destination. Like, I still to this day will not drive behind a log truck on the highway. Like, I refuse. I'm like, I'm not going to do it. Like, there's just certain things that you that stick with you and that change you. And in this case, with the American Cancer Society, their marketing game was so good with telling people and associating people with smoking and lung cancer, mm-hmm, that now, even though lung cancer is the number one cancer killer in the United States for men and women, even though it disproportionately affects African Americans, it's the number one killer, more than pancreatic, breast, and colon cancer combined. It, wow, is the least funded cancer that is out there, and it's the number one, but it's the least funded. And that's because there is such a stigma attached to lung cancer, mm-hmm, that the government and FDA and all these folks just think, oh, it's a smoker's disease. People who smoke cigarettes get lung cancer. That's their fault. They shouldn't have smoked. And the growing majority of people now, and a large proportion, I believe 20 to 25% of people who are diagnosed with lung cancer never smoked. So the rhetoric that the American Cancer Society peddled to us for so long, while it is important, yes, smoking can increase your risk of getting lung cancer, it's not the thing and it's not the deciding factor for getting lung cancer. And what they've done is they've really shot the entire lung cancer community in the foot, because, mm-hmm, now we have to lobby and peddle and beg and borrow and plead for them to fund this cancer, because they just don't want to give it the same kind of funding that they give breast cancer and all that other stuff, because it's just like, they just assume it's a smoker's disease, and that's the stigma that's attached to it, you know? And one of the things, like, I had a really good conversation today on my show with five other Black women who have cancer diagnoses. And like, I'm patting myself on the back for this one, because like, I literally amassed this group of women from all different spectrums. So, mm-hmm, I'm L positive lung cancer. I had a woman on there who was a ROS1 mutation. I had another woman on there who was also non-small cell, but she had a very rare, you know, version of it. I had a small cell lung cancer patient who's been around for 14 years, which is absolutely crazy, because small cell lung cancer is the equivalent of a pancreatic cancer. It is the most aggressive and the scariest of lung cancers. Like, lung cancer as a whole is stigmatized. Small cell lung cancer is the stigmatized stigma of lung cancer. Like, that's the one. That's the one that you don't want to, you know, get. And she's been around for 14 years, so she's literally a unicorn walking
this
earth.
Good for her. Praise God.
And another woman who, you know, also had, I believe, small cell lung cancer, or non-small cell lung cancer as well, and is a doctor. So I literally had people, you know, on the show that were from all walks of the cancer spectrum and lung cancer, and we had a really good conversation about it. And the one thing we talked about was just how we're all trying to reclaim the narrative and change, mm-hmm, the stigma. Because like, when you look at me, you're not like, oh, she's got lung cancer. Like, there was no, mm-hmm, reason why you would ever associate me with lung cancer, because I'm not the face of lung cancer in general. No. Like, I don't fit the demographic. I don't fit the profile. You know, so much so that even if I was to go to the hospital and tell them, hey, I'm having issues, they wouldn't even think to screen me for lung cancer, because, mm-hmm, I don't fit the demographic. But that's because there's just so much stigma around, like, oh, it's not lung cancer, or, oh, if you smoke, you have lung cancer. So the moment you tell them you don't smoke, you're healthy and all that, they just throw it out the window. They don't, yeah, even offer you an x-ray. They don't offer you any kind of, you know, scans to assess what's going on in your lungs, when screening in an early detection is your best and most effective way of prevention and treatment for lung cancer. And that's, mm-hmm, why they're finding folks like me and folks like everybody I talked to today who are coming into this at late stage, because it's, yeah, like, you're getting it at stage 3, stage 4, and you're like, what? Like, how? Yeah. You know, and it's because the screening process is wrong. The rhetoric and narrative around lung cancer is so stigmatized that people don't want to talk about it, don't want to like acknowledge it or fund it. And it's all of these things compounding together. And it's like, really, we're like, people, you need to wake up and look. If you have lungs in your chest, you can get lung cancer. You don't need to smoke to make it happen. You don't need smoking to kickstart it. It just has to happen if you have lungs. It'll happen if you have lungs. And people don't seem to understand that. And we're working really hard to really explain to people that, like, this is normal. Like, it's targeting young African-American women who are healthy. Yeah. That is literally the target of getting this lung cancer, especially the ALK mutation. It's, like, specific to the African-American, mm-hmm, woman community. So it's, like, the education is just not there. So I had a really great show about that today, you know, trying to really dispel some of the stigma and stuff. But it just, you know, it's the marketing campaigns, man. I'm telling you, like, your marketing can can change everything.
Well, I mean, how have you and others, I guess, tried to tackle that, right? Because I know that you're very active within the American Lung Cancer Association. And I know we did the walk. Was it last year? Because, you know, COVID brain messed me up. Was it last year or 2 years ago? I can't even remember anymore.
So for those that don't know, I was diagnosed in December of 2018 with stage 4 L-positive lung cancer in, when was that? May? No, it was late because it was cold. It was like September.
No, it was... I think it was September, October that you were in the hospital and...
December. I was in the hospital.
Oh, December. That's right. December, you were in the hospital.
The walk was the following October.
Yeah.
We did the lung cancer or the Free to Breathe walk with the Lung Cancer Research Foundation, which is a nonprofit based out in New York.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was interesting because all the women on my show today, we're all... in organizations. We are all on boards of things. Like, I'm on the Young Professionals Committee for Lung Cancer Research Foundation. I'm working to get on the American Lung Association one and probably on Longevity too. But all of us were across the board sitting on these boards. And it was like, it was great because that's one of the ways that we are doing that. That's one of the ways that we're combating the stigma is, you know, people are sitting in these rooms and the problem is they don't see us. Like, when we go into the hospital, and you know, we talk about this all the time, like, Black women in healthcare, we have to work twice as hard to get the proper treatment.
Yep.
And people don't understand that. They're like, oh, you know, you're just saying that. And it's like, no, I just sat in a round table with six other women who had a story eerily similar to mine about how we went in to see a doctor, not one, but two, maybe sometimes three. One woman went and saw like 4 to 5 doctors, you know, who all dismissed what was going on. And were just like, here's an inhaler. Here's a cough suppressant.
Yep.
We're going to do it. We'll wait 6 months and do another x-ray. Like, and we had to fight tooth and nail for them to take us seriously because they didn't see us. They don't see us. We're not represented. So the way we advocate and the way we take back and claim back the narrative is by sitting at the table and letting them see us. So not only are we participating in these lung cancer research organizations, you know, as board members, as, you know, participants, we're patients and we're Black women as patients. So it's like, we are speaking for the group of us that doesn't get to get seen, you know? Yeah. And so that's one of the steps in reclaiming that narrative is having a seat at the table. And so that was one of the big things that we were talking about today is, it's like Operation Join the Board for us. Like, get on the board of all these organizations so your opinions, your thoughts, your ideas, you know, your story can be heard and people can start to normalize. Like, we need to normalize Black women having cancer because it's not a thing and they don't talk about it.
Yeah. So, and I think that that's really important, this idea of being part of the leadership, right? Being part of the group of individuals who are making the decisions on your life, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when it's funny, you're talking about joining these boards and a lot, you know, in the past, I would never think that that would be something of such importance, right? To be part of these boards and to join these boards. But like, I'm realizing more and more each and every day that, you know, being at the table is so critical for the Black community, right? Mm-hmm. Having representatives from the Black community, especially representatives from the Black community who are suffering from these diseases, right? To be part of the discussion, because oftentimes it's a group of white men that are making decisions that one have no personal experience with the disease or may not have experience with somebody who has the disease on an intimate level to really understand what needs to happen and to really understand how to truly advocate, right? But here you are, you and these amazing group of women who I didn't get to meet, but I know they're amazing, that are talking about their experiences and they're talking about how they are making sure that they have a seat at the table, not really just for, you know, to advocate for themselves, but for every Black woman, for every Black individual, person of color, who is often set aside and often pushed to the back of the line, right? And often not believed when it comes to their, you know, their health and their condition. So I think that's very, very powerful, this idea of, you know, making yourself be seen, because they're not going to see you on their own.
Yeah. And the one thing, one of the women I was talking to today on the show, her name is Nichelle. She was telling me that she's like, I really needed to, she had a particularly hard time getting the doctors to take her seriously. She's like, no, I know something is wrong. I'm trying to tell you something is not right. And the doctors were like, well, wait 6 months. She's like, no, something is up. And like, she had to really fight with these doctors. So once she actually got in to see one and was like setting up her appointments and things like that, she saw that he had a picture of like his daughter and his granddaughter or something like that on the shelf. And she's like, oh, you know, is that your kid? And he's like, yeah, that's my daughter, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, okay, this is my son. She's like, and I need to get home to him. And I need to take care of him because he has a disease too. So I need you to look at me like I'm your daughter when it comes to my care. Like, wow. I need you to pay attention and I need you to see me. And she really had this conversation with him, you know, because it's like sometimes you have to force that bedside manner on these doctors, because it's like when we walk in the door from up to a hospital, we're already dealing with at least sometimes 3 to 5 biases before we can even get to baseline medical care. Yeah. You walk in the door, you're a woman, already a problem. You're Black, a second problem. You have some kind of a disease, you know, whatever it may be, a problem. And it's just all of these different barriers that you have to deal with where before you can even get the most basic of healthcare, an x-ray, you know, somebody to look at your charts and look at your scans and sit with you, you got to get past these biases and you have to get past these doors. It's like, you know, getting to the hospital, but before you can go see the doctor, you got to fight like Bowser in the Super Mario freaking castle. You know what I mean? Like, before I can see my doctor, I have to see Princess Peach or something, you know? So it's all of these obstacles and things you have to go through and levels you got to get to just for them to look at you and to realize that you're a human being and to take you seriously. And it's so exhausting. And that's why, you know, people don't advocate for themselves when they get to the hospital. The doctor says, oh, you know, I don't think that's what it is. And they're like, okay, yeah, he's probably right. Because they know, like, it's an uphill battle, you know, trying to fight these doctors to pay attention. And sometimes people just don't have the strength or the mental bandwidth to do it. And, you know, that's how you get, you give yourself a disservice when it comes time for your medical care, because like the doctors are going to take advantage and just, they have 1,008 people to see and they're, you're just appointment number 5 at 2:30 PM. Like, you know, like your symptoms don't look life threatening. You're good. Unless you're like, okay, wait a minute though. Like I had shortness of breath sitting in a chair. So like my heart rate rose to 140 beats per minute at resting. You know, like that's when, that's how you advocate. You let them know like, okay, it says this on paper, but that's not what's actually happening. And I need you to see. And that's where people, that's where the breakdown in communication is. People take what doctors say at face value and just say, oh, they know best. They don't, they don't always, they're human just like you and me. They just went to school a little longer, you know, like.
That's really important. That's really important. Cause you know, and it's one of the things that, you know, you said the whole advocating for yourself and then really relying on what doctors are saying and taking that as gold and how that's all obviously not really to our best interest. Right. I think a lot of us are tired, right? Because we know that the biases are there. Even, and one thing is like, it doesn't matter what your socioeconomic status is. Once you're Black and you're a woman, it doesn't really matter because you have professional women, doctors, lawyers going in for their doctor's visits, being treated as if they're the trash on the sidewalk, right? Like nobody's really paying attention. So it's not to say that it doesn't matter your level of education or sophistication, you know, everybody is getting treated, you know, as if, you know, whatever they're in there to see is like, it's nothing, right?
But even I think you're underinsured. Like you're underinsured, it's even worse. They're like, oh, we're not, you need an x-ray.
And they're not even trying to do that. And I think it's really important for people to take stock in their health. Like I know for me, I make sure, and this has happened to me on several occasions, you know, trying to figure out whatever this mystery situation that's going on with me. You know as a person that I never have high blood pressure. Like I know that if I have high blood pressure, something is wrong with me because I don't have a history. So when you go into the doctor and you're like, my blood pressure is usually like 110 over 70, right? Which is amazing. Yeah. But when they tell me it's 140 and they're like, oh, that's okay. Whoa, whoa, whoa. It's, no, it's usually not 110. 140 is not okay. But it's like, but if I never paid attention, like if I just allowed them to take my blood pressure and never paid attention to what was ever on the monitor, I would just be like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever, 140. And that's it. So for me, I remember even having to advocate to say, run another test because my blood pressure is always 110. You're telling me it's 140. That's a problem. I'm not leaving here with you telling me that this is normal. This is not normal. And even for that, right, like that you have to have an argument with the nurse and an argument with the doctor to look further because your blood pressure.
When it takes literally 5 minutes to wrap your arm in the little tight thing or whatever and squeeze you real hard until you feel like your arm's going to explode. It takes three minutes.
Just squeeze me again.
Squeeze me again. One more time, please. I need you to squeeze me again.
Just double check, right?
Yeah.
Something as basic as that. Like you're fighting, you're arguing with the doctor because it's crazy.
I'll do you one better. My last set of scans that I had. So I am at a stage where I do scans every 3 months, right? Mm-hmm. My last set of scans, I went into the appointment and they were like, okay, so we have a script here to scan your abdomen and your pelvis. And then you should be all set. And I was like, wait. I was like, you mean my chest too, right? And they were like, no, just your abdomen and pelvis. I'm like, I have lung cancer. So what are you scanning? You're scanning here down. That's great and all. But like, I need you to scan from here down. Like the lungs need to be scanned. Like, and they're like, no. Well, we only have the script to do your abdomen and your pelvis. I'm like, okay, but I'm telling you, you need to call somebody because I have lung cancer. You need to scan my lungs. Like, and I had to literally argue with the nurse. So long story short, they were like, well, we can't get the script today. So I literally had to get the abdomen and pelvis done and then come back like the next day or whatever, or a couple days later for them to scan my chest. And I'm just like,
ridiculous.
But had I like, so then I'm talking to my doctor, right? So I get my results and he's like, well, you know, where are your chest scan results? I'm like, oh, they didn't do them yet. And he's like, what? I'm like, yeah, you know, the script they had said it only said abdomen and pelvis. I tried to tell them they needed to scan my lungs, but you know, what do I know? I just living in my body. And he was just like, oh, and he was like, someone's going to have a bad day. But it was just like arguing with the nurses. Like, I mean, if I'm telling you that 2 + 2 = 4 and it's tested, what is the problem?
Like, yeah. Like, what does my chart say? Could you go into my chart?
You can look at the chart. Yeah. Like, I have lung cancer. You need to scan these. You got to scan the lungs. Like, that's where it is. I don't understand. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's the struggles that you have. And if I wasn't an advocate for myself or I wasn't somebody who's like, you know, going to push back, then it'd be like, oh, you know, well, they only scan my abdomen and pelvis and leave it at that. And I'm like,
yeah. And a lot of people, unfortunately, do that. They walk away with like, cause they're like, well, you're the doctor, right? I mean, what do I know? You're the doctor. I'm here to see you. You're the expert. So if this is what you say, then I guess this is what I have to deal with, even though I feel that this is not 100% correct.
Exactly. You know, and so that's why we talk about advocating for yourself. But it's not just necessarily about, there's a two-prong, you know, attack for this. It's not just, you know, advocating for yourself in these hospitals. It's also researching what's going on with you. It's looking up what's happening and researching when they tell you you have X, Y, and Z. Okay, what is X, Y, and Z? How did it come? Where did it come from? How did I get, like, all this kind of stuff? And really, you know, looking through what it is that you're diagnosed with. So you have a full understanding of what's happening inside you. There's nothing worse than having a condition and you don't know anything about it. You know, like it's like you're walking around with a blindfold on purpose, you know, like all you need to do is untie your blindfold and look around you and look at your surroundings and see what's happening, you know.
And it's okay to Google.
Yeah. You know, don't go too far down WebMD because, you know, WebMD will have you all messed up in your head, but it doesn't hurt to do a Google research, you know, sort of quest to find out what it is that they're diagnosing you with and what are maybe some potential things you should be looking for.
Yeah.
You know, so like there are side effects that they may not mention to you, like that you need to be paying attention to, like, okay, my skin's a little yellow. Like, no, like that might be one of them conditions that they talk about at 2 o'clock in the morning. Like you gotta pay attention to this stuff. Yeah. You gotta know what's going on with your body.
Yeah. You can't just leave it to happenstance. And a lot of people do that too. They're just kind of like, you know, like I don't know if it's because they just don't want to know because of the fear of knowing. That can be it too. But a lot of people just kind of like they, whatever it, right? Yeah, I've had this pain in my back for 3 years, but I don't know. I'll take it, you know, like whatever. The doctor said it's nothing, right? And then they'll leave it at that.
I will say that, like, since my diagnosis and a lot of my friend circles have that same attitude, they were like, oh, you know, I've had this pain in my foot that I've just been dealing with forever. Like, a lot of them have said, like, all right, I'm going to go to the doctor and get checked out now. Like, I need to look into this. Like, you just sparked me to go and take care of myself. And like Cat Williams said, you got to be in tune with your star player. Like,
yep. Yep. It's true. You have to be in tune with yourself. Like, if something is, I mean, like I said, you've lived in your body all your life, right?
Yeah.
If you're now having a pain that's come out of nowhere, it doesn't hurt to address it. If it's nothing, it's nothing. But if it's a pain that you've never experienced before and it's popping up, it could be indicative of something. You know, yeah. You can't just let that go. But I mean,
I always say, one of the things I said when I first got my diagnosis and when I was talking about it is like, we have this tendency to run our bodies like we do our cars. You know, your check engine light comes on in your car, signaling to you that something is wrong. And you're like, just a few more miles, I'll check it later. Or you know what, you probably just need some gas. I'm gonna go ahead and put gas in the car. Or like, you know, better yet, you're tired, you're running on fumes, but you're like, I know my car. Like, I know how far my car can go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we run our bodies like we do our vehicles. And it's like, sometimes that check engine light is coming on for a real reason. It just doesn't pop on just to say, hey, what's up? Like, that check engine light is popping on to let you know something ain't running right in the machine here and you need to take a look at it. And your body does the same thing. Your body will give you symptoms that you need to pay attention to. And I didn't pay attention to my symptoms, or at least I attributed them to the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And I was talking to a coworker of mine who was like, oh yeah, you know, I get Charlie horses in my legs sometimes and I usually take pain medication for them. And, you know, usually I can just work through it and it's fine. Well, the one day he called out and he was like, yeah, I got a Charlie horse in my stomach. And that hasn't happened before. So I'm going to go to the hospital and get checked out. And I was like, you know what that is? That's your body saying, hey, we tried telling you something's wrong with your legs and you're not paying attention. So now we're going to escalate the situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's like, you have these symptoms and you have to pay attention to what's going on with your body, because your body will let you know when you're out of sorts. Like, your body should run like a well-oiled machine, usually, unless you're old. Things happen when you get older that it just is what it is. But like, typically your body should run, your internal organs should run. There are things in place to keep us running regular.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we're running out of whack, our check engine light comes on and you have to pay attention to what those symptoms are so you can fix it. So you get your body back into gear. Otherwise you're going to become a lemon.
Yeah, literally. I love the car analogies.
it puts it into perspective and people can understand it, because we all do it. Like, check engine light comes on and you're like, ah, next payday, I got you.
Yep,
you
know, yep.
Like, same thing with your body. It's like, I got this headache. Grab some aspirin, take care of it later. It comes back the next day. I'll take some aspirin first thing in the morning. You know what I mean? Like, stop navigating around your symptoms and pay attention to what's going on with yourself.
So I guess I want to kind of get an update on where you are now, right? Because it's been 2 years now, right? About going on 2 years since all of this happened, right? And since last year when you were on the show, you kind of took us through your journey, how you found out, you know, what your mind state was. But, you know, now that we're, you know, in the year of 2020,
Eye roll, like, so
what's been going on in this new year, right? In this, what, year two, I guess, of having lung cancer? What's new this year, right? Like, what's been going on? How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty great.
You look great.
Knock on wood right now. Thank you. I feel good. You know, I guess I look good, which is great. But like, honestly, I feel good. So my medication, you know, again, knocking on wood, is still working. I'm still on my first line of medication, which is Alecensa, which is a TKI. Don't ask me what that stands for. It's like a tyrosine kinase inhibitor, some crazy like that.
Mm-hmm.
But basically it's my first line of defense. I'm still on that medication. I have since left New York. I moved to Savannah, Georgia in the midst of the pandemic.
I rolled.
In April, I moved down here right as New York was getting ready to lock up and shut down ship.
I'm sad.
I packed up and moved down here to Savannah, Georgia. So I now live down here. We are house hunting, although fingers crossed, we think we've got something. But I've changed doctors. That was a process, which I'll go through in a second. I've changed jobs 3 times. I think I hold the record. No, probably not. But I definitely hold the record in my own personal life for fastest time quitting a job. Started a job, worked Thursday and Friday, and quit on Sunday. I was like, I'm not going back in there. I'm just not going to do it. I quit via email on a Sunday afternoon. I was like, yeah, what's the line from Harlem Nights? Yeah, I ain't never come back again. No. Like, I ain't never coming home again.
We're good, thanks.
But so I've switched jobs 3 times. What else? I started a partnership with the American Lung Association, and WJMS was the media sponsor for the Lung Forest Walk, which was the first ever virtual walk for the American Lung Association, which was exciting, and the first time that we've been the media sponsor and partner for anything like that, which was exhausting. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into that one. A lot of stressing about internet bandwidth. I also still partner with the Lung Cancer Research Foundation, and I co-hosted their Free to Breathe Walk, like just earlier. What was it? What is this? November? It was October, I believe. Co-hosted that alongside Nidia Han from 6ABC Philadelphia, which was pretty cool. What else? We have some other things coming up in the works between two of those two organizations that are not set in stone just yet, but I'm still just working with both of them. I'm on the board, like I said, at the Lung Cancer Research Foundation. So they have, you know, quarterly meetings and event meetings and stuff, and, you know, events where I get to kind of interface with actual doctors and scientific researchers and stuff like that, and talk about what they're doing and see their actual research in their labs and everything. So that's always exciting. But yeah, so I switched doctor's offices, and Jesus take the wheel, for lack of a better term, Jesus take the wheel. I absolutely miss the New York healthcare system. I never thought I'd say it, but a New York minute is a real thing. Like, yeah. It is a real thing. It is a real measure of time. Everything in New York, quick. Mm-hmm. You need it done? Quick. Can't get it done? Another doctor can do it quick. You know what I mean? Like, it's great. Down here in Savannah, as you know, living down south, things are slower, much slower. And I am just absolutely 100% not satisfied with the care that I'm getting at my current doctor, but I don't have the plethora of options like I had in New York. Mm-hmm. You know, when I got my diagnosis in New York, I had my first treatment was through NYU Langone, which is a top rated cancer facility in the United States, really. And then my backup treatment center was Memorial Sloan Kettering, which is like number two. So I was like, I was good. Your girl was set. But I moved down here to Savannah, which is a much smaller suburb, so a much smaller city. And their healthcare system is, it's good. It's just not New York. You know, New York is
not what you're used to.
Yeah. You know, and so I've had some hiccups, you know, in terms of medication. I went for about almost 5 days without medication at one point because my doctor and the insurance company
did not connect.
Like, y'all don't speak English. Y'all can't talk to each other. Like, also what needs to do is approve my medication. Like, I literally went 5 days without medicine because they're that ridiculous. My doctor's office has, like, there'll be like 100 people in a day. And so that means there's like 23,000 people guests a day at this hospital.
Oh, gosh.
Crazy. And so I'm waiting for 3 hours just to get seen, to get my results, 3 hours or more in a waiting room. And I'm just like, I'm just 100% unsatisfied.
Over it. Yeah.
I'm looking for other providers, but it's like, you kind of have to, I'm looking for an oncologist who is a thoracic or lung cancer, pulmonary type of you know, cancer doctor, somebody who's up to speed on lung cancer. Cause it's like the thing that people don't understand is obviously there's different sciences, you know, behind each of the cancers. So there's, you know, breast cancer surgeons and, you know, blood cancers and all these different things. And like, you really want to go to a doctor who specializes in what you have, because it just means that they've done research papers, they've done, you know, their own experimentation and test trials and stuff like that. And they just have a lot more understanding into the community that you're in. You know, if you go to just a general oncologist, it's like getting it's like a GED. I'm not relegating. I don't want people to be like, oh my gosh, she doesn't think oncologists do work. No, I just mean that general oncologists have a broad sense of all of them. You know, they don't have a specialized focus. And that's what you kind of want when you have cancer, is you want a specialized doctor. So there aren't a lot of them down here in Savannah. Now, if I want to hop in the car and drive 3 hours to Atlanta, I could do that. But Atlanta is turned up, and I am not trying to get COVID to go get a doctor's
appointment. Not trying to catch the COVID.
Yeah, and that's its own set of scary things. So it's, you know, I'm trying to find an oncologist who I can transfer to that may give me more personalized care like I need. You know, and just it's hard. So it's that's a struggle for me right now, is just like, you know, it's bad enough going in every 3 months for scans. It's added torture knowing that the doctor's office that you're going to is probably going to mess it up or do something to piss you off, like, or stress you out or make you cry. Like, they can't find my veins and I got to wait 3 hours in the waiting room. And, you know, it's just like,
it's a nightmare.
I just want to go in and get my scans and be scared for the scans. Like, don't piss me off so much. Like, this thing was so bad last time until I wasn't even excited about the good news I got about my scans, because I was so thoroughly pissed off at the doctor's office that I was just disgusted. I was like, that's great, I'm happy. Like, I didn't even care that my scan results came back good. I was like, wonderful. Didn't care, you know. I couldn't care less. So it's hard. It's hard when you switch doctor's offices, and like, having cancer is a pain in the butt, to say the least. You know, you don't want to have to be switching oncologists in the middle of your treatment, because it's a nightmare. So
oh gosh, I mean, I'm stressed for you. I'm all right.
My next scan is not till January, so I got some time before I have to worry about anything. But hopefully by January, I will have found another oncologist that is reputable and that I feel like would fit me a little bit better. I just want to go to a couple of consultations and see and like talk to some of these doctor's offices. Cause like the one I'm at, he's like, oh, I have a practice here. And there's another practice like in Pooler or Rankin, which is like about a 35 minute drive from here. Right. Mm-hmm. So he's like, you know, on Wednesdays I'm there, and I'm only here on like Mondays and Tuesdays and Thursdays or something. So it's like all of the patients that he sees and that he needs to see happen on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. And there's no Wednesday and like there's no Friday. So that means you have 3 days a week to see your entire gauntlet of patients. That means you have, like, I think he said they had 114 patients scheduled one day. And I was like,
no, that's crazy.
What is the math on that? Like, that's like, I'm not a math major, but that's like at least like more than 12 an hour.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. You only get 60 minutes an hour. That means everybody's getting 5 minutes or less. And some people take longer because stuff happens and you got to do things and stuff. Like, you need blood and like labs and all that stuff. Like, and it just makes for a nightmare, you know, like at any given time, there's 64 people in the waiting room, which is not a good thing for COVID.
Not with COVID-19, but I guess they're not concerned about that, you know, with lung cancer patients.
Yeah. Everyone's socially distanced, but like, you know, whatever. So like, that's what I'm talking about. It's like the quality of care. When I was at NYU, I knew my nurses. Like, I would come in, I was busted up with the nurses while I was getting, you know, EKGs and stuff. Like, I'd come in and the lady would be like, how you doing? I'm like, don't try to be my friend. All you're going to do is stab me with a needle. Like, and she would laugh. Like, we would bust it up and have a good time. I don't have that same rapport with these doctors down here and with these nurses. And it's not like I can make that, because they're so overstretched that it's like, they don't have time to bust it up with me. They're like, give me your veins. You need to take your blood. I got like 65 people after you.
They're like, listen here, number five.
Yeah, your shenanigans and your comedy right now. I need to, like, there's 42 people in line behind you.
Yeah,
give me your vein and shush.
Well, we're sending an AP, putting an APB out there. If anybody who's listening knows of an oncologist who specializes in the lungs in the Savannah, in the greater Savannah area in Georgia, please slip up in the DM according to RP.
And goes down in the DMs.
Yes.
Let
it go down in the DMs, because we need to help Jamie. We need to help Jamie. We can't have her dealing with this. And you know, you would think Southern hospitality. This is not hospitality. This is not hospitality at all. This is despicable, is what it is.
I told the doctor too, I was like, I don't think I can see you anymore. And he was just looking. I was like, you know, I'm like, I come in here. I was like, I felt so bad, because I'm like, I know you're busy. I understand that. But you need to know that you're about to lose a whole entire patient, because you just got to do better. Like, you got to do better.
Yeah. And we're dealing with people with serious illnesses here. We're not talking about the common cold where it's like, oh, you're wasting. This is not urgent care.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm like, I called the doctor's office because I was like, hey, I'd like to speak to the oncologist. You know, can you have him return my call? You know, I have questions about my scans. Nobody said anything to him, or at least he said nobody told him anything. And it was like 3 to 4 days. And I'm like, see, this is the shit I'm talking about. Like,
yeah, exactly unacceptable. Unacceptable.
Like, if I have questions about my scans as your patient, you have to call me back. Like, that's what I pay you for.
Unacceptable. Unacceptable.
Yeah. So New York, I miss you. I'm sorry. Take me back.
Well, we would love to take you back, but you betrayed us and went to Georgia. So. So with respect to awareness, right? I mean, what can we do? Those of us who, you know, are out here that are listening to this, I mean, we talked a lot about, you know, some of the, you know, issues that you've been experiencing, right? We've talked about the stigma and why lung cancer awareness is not, you know, as broad as it should be, right? And as recognized and put out to the forefront, like the breast cancers of the world and, you know, the pancreatic cancers of the world, because of this negative stigma that, you know, you have lung cancer because you smoked or you're around somebody who smoked, right? Yeah. How can we, those of us who are tuning in, do better, right? Like, how can we help raise the awareness? How can we help donate, right? Because, I mean, there's a lot of research that needs to be done in this area. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And I would assume money, dollar bills, you know, you know, the pesos. I'm assuming that it takes a lot of money, right? And because there's not much awareness that goes on because of the stigma, that means that there's not a lot of money being raised, right? Yeah. For this type of cancer. So how can we help?
So essentially what happens is the government doesn't funnel money into the lung cancer industry like it does the other ones, which means that scientific research is done by and large by organizations like the Lung Cancer Research Foundation and, you know, the American Lung Association, who award grants to scientists to complete their research and do the things that they want to do. So essentially this month, what I'm trying to do, and I expanded my Free to Breathe walk, sort of fundraiser that I was doing for the Lung Cancer Research Foundation, so that I could raise $2,400 for the Lung Cancer Research Foundation's research grants. Mm-hmm. And basically what that means is every $100 will fund 1 hour of research, scientific research. So I'm trying to raise one whole day's worth of research in the name of science in my name. So people can go to my Facebook page. I'm Jamie Jam on Facebook, and see the link to donate. I'll also send it to you, Rita, so you can
go
to
I could repost it.
But yeah, I mean, donations is helpful. But one of the main things I would say is, I mean, just get screened. Like, the biggest, like I mentioned earlier, the easiest and most effective way to prevent and, you know, treat a lot of this stuff is to get scanned or to get screened early. Because if they catch it early, you can get it early. You know, you can chop it out or do what you got to do. And most people that do that are usually fine. So it's getting screened, but the screening process right now, like I mentioned earlier in the show, they have like these strict guidelines on who can get screened for lung cancer. Like, you had to have, like, you know, hopped on your left leg twice and spun around in a circle on a full moon, you know, like
bark like a dog.
Just a whole bunch of nonsensical things, when it's like, it's the number one killer of men and women in the United States. Why are there so many things that need to happen for me to get screened? But literally all you need to do is go to your doctor and say you want to get a screening for lung cancer, and they're going to be like, well, why? And they're going to give you pushback, but that's where the advocacy for yourself comes into play. Just say, I want to know and I want to get screened. And, you know, if you want to get screened and you're willing to pay for it, it's not a lot of money. Most of the time they'll do it for you. You know, like, okay. I don't even think it will cost you anything if you have insurance. I'm pretty sure a screening is preventative, so it should be covered under most insurance plans.
So you can just go in and say, I want to be screened, without having to say, well, listen, I feel like my breathing's been off, or I feel like, you know, my chest, like, you can just walk in and say, I want to be screened.
You could even just be like, yeah, my mom smoked all when I was a kid, and I just want to get screened for lung cancer, or somebody in my family has lung cancer, I want to be screened. You can go in there. You don't have to give them any reasoning for why you want to get screened for lung cancer. It is your right to get screened, you know, but they don't like sending people for screenings because, you know, it takes effort and all that kind of stuff for whatever reason. So they always give you some pushback. But as long as you're, you know, demand that you get a screening, you just go to your primary care and just say, I want you to set me up with a lung cancer screening. And they'll go through the process.
Okay.
You know, especially, and if you have somebody in your life who smoked, or if you ever smoked in your life, you could, easiest way, if you smoke, just be like, yeah, I used to smoke. I want to get screened for lung cancer. And they'll set you right up. Set you right up. Won't ask any questions. Like, that's fine.
Okay.
Set you right up. But if you never smoked anything and you don't have any history of cancer in your family and you're an otherwise healthy individual and you go in there and say you want to be scanned for lung cancer, they're going to be like, no, why? Like, it's preposterous. It's the craziest thing you ever want to see. But the moment you say, yeah, I smoked a couple cigarettes when I was younger, they're like, oh, scanner.
Yeah. And it's crazy, though.
It's education still behind it. Like,
yeah.
smoking and lung cancer. It's more to it than that. It's so much more to it than that. But honestly, my advice for you guys and how you can help is to, you know, get rid of that stigma yourself. Like, don't assume that just because someone has lung cancer, they smoked. And get yourself screened. And then tell everybody in your family and your friends to get screened. Because the more people that ask to get screened and the more people that, you know, petition to make it happen, they'll realize that this is an actual, you know, something that's happening in the community that people care about, and they'll start to pay attention and kind of legislation will take notice. So the more people that get screened, the better our fight is, the stronger our fight is. And then it's, you know, one of those things like get an HIV test, you'd rather know than not know, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy though that you say that it is the leading, like this is the cancer that's the leading killer, right? Everybody talks about breast cancer. They always talk about pancreatic cancer. They talk about all sorts of cancers, but the fact that lung cancer, like she says, I think probably the least funded, or at least the awareness is not as there. And this is the leading, you know, killer, right? The leading cancer that kills, and disproportionately African-American people. Like, it's crazy. Like, nope. Like, I would tell you if you were to poll 100 Americans, this is where my game show stuff comes in, right? If you were to poll 100 Americans, they would tell you and ask them whether or not this is true. They'd be like, no, false.
Yeah.
Because nobody thinks that lung cancer is a real issue unless you're a smoker. But to know that it is the leading killer, right? And to know that it disproportionately affects African Americans, it's very, very scary. It's very, very scary. It's more so scary because people don't know that.
Yep. And it's the statistic is that of all of the cancer related deaths that happen in an entire year, lung cancer deaths make up 25% of that number. So of all the cancers that are out there, lung cancer makes up 25%. That's almost a quarter, or it is a quarter.
It is a quarter, yeah.
Every death. Yeah. So if you line, here's a better trivia question. If you lined up 100 cancer patients, you know, in a row, 25 of them would have lung cancer.
Wow.
And of those 25, we'll say like 18 of them are African-American.
And that statistic right there, and the way that you broke it down, the visualization of it is scary. Out of 25 individuals that have lung cancer, 18 of them will be African-American, will be Black, right?
Yeah.
That's crazy. And I tell you, it blows my mind because we do not know that. No, 100 Americans, poll them. They would not be able, they would not believe you when you say that. Nope. They would be like, no, you're lying. It's breast cancer. You know?
It's true.
That's crazy.
So it's one of those things where the marketing worked and didn't work all at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah. Yeah, and the media. And so, yeah, it's just get screened. Everybody just get screened. Yeah. I've asked all of my family and all my friends, particularly my friends and family who smoked or are still smoking. And I'm still like, you still smoke cigarettes while I'm sitting here with stage 4 lung cancer. You still smoke cigarettes. Okay. That's what's up. Like, take your life into your own hands. I got it without smoking. You just want to, you just want to be like me. Like, what is this?
That's crazy.
So yeah, I tell all my friends and family who smoke to get screened early. Now, especially my family. Now, my dad was adopted. Mm-hmm. So we don't know who his parents, well, I think he may know, I don't know, but we don't know what their history is, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I say there's no history of cancer in my family, to my knowledge. Nobody in my immediate family has cancer. I'm the only one. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would say my brother and my sister, yeah, y'all need to go on ahead and get scanned. Cause like, if I got this, I don't know where it came from. You know, it might be genetic. So it's, I've told everybody to just go, you know.
Now, is this something that a chest x-ray would show? Like when you say screen, like a regular chest x-ray would show it?
Yeah, just okay. A regular x-ray, a regular old chest x-ray will screen you to see, because the x-ray is going to show you if there's any, you know, tumors, any bright spots, anything out of the ordinary inside your lungs. It will show up on an x-ray, or it might be maybe a PET scan. But it's, okay. I mean, it's literally just a scan. You don't have to give any blood. You don't have to, you know, pee in a cup. Like, you don't have to do any of that stuff. It's just a scan.
Okay, cool. Well, that's good to know. Because I was like, I've had several chest x-rays in my life for other issues. So I'm like, I think I'm good so far. I have a little nodule, but it's not grown. So it's good. We've been watching it for years now and it's fine. But it's good to know, like, the process is nothing like extraordinary, because people are afraid of extraordinary, right? You tell me that I gotta, like, you know, sit down and get all these needles jammed up on me, I might think twice about, you know, getting a scan.
No, I mean, it's something that they could throw on the back end of a yearly exam, and it would cost, I mean, it would not cost, but it would be little to no inconvenience. Like, it's like, all right, now you got to go have this quick scan. It takes maybe 5 minutes.
Okay.
Go in there. And if, for those folks that are claustrophobic, like myself, the PET scan is open. So okay. it looks like a Cheerio. Like, it's not like a toilet paper tube like you would think it is.
Yeah.
It's like a Cheerio instead. So it's like an open.
I've been through that. Yeah. Okay.
So that's helpful. All right.
Yeah. No, because that's also a concern too. A lot of people are claustrophobic and they're like, I can't do it and I won't do it. So that's good to know.
I have to get scans of my brain, because one of the common places lung cancer spreads to is the brain. Mm-hmm. So I forget what the frequency is. I think it's yearly, but they do an MRI, and that is the worst procedure ever. And yeah. I have had a chest tube procedure with no anesthesia. But the MRI, well, no, that was pretty shitty. But the MRI is like close second.
Yeah. Yeah. I've almost like, get me out of here. I've had that moment. Yeah. Panic attacks.
Because they like, it's like, it's bad enough you have to go in this big long tube, but then it's like they put these things.
The thing on, yep.
And they put like a hockey mask. Over
yep.
And I'm like, do you want earplugs? No.
Yeah, your hands are above your head or across your chest, and then there's that annoying noise in your ear, so it's loud. It's, and then heaven forbid the sheet that they put over you is like covering your feet, and now you're too hot, and it's a whole hot mess. I've been there way too many times.
That tube is so tight until you can feel like it's so tight you can feel go like in the PET scan, you don't feel it, because I mean you feel it because you can hear and sort
yeah,
of
but it's not the same.
But on the MRI, you can feel the sides of the tube as you slide into that joint. I'm like, oh, this is so tight. I know it is. I know there's like no space, and like my brain just goes nuts.
Yeah, and your heart and your heart's just jumping up. Girl, I'm getting flashbacks. I don't want to think about it anymore.
I had to take a Xanax. I had to take two Xanax before I went in for my MRI, because I literally was like, can I get out? I'm sorry. I just need a minute. Like,
I had to do that before. I was like, get me out of this thing now. Now.
They were like, are you okay? They were like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm not.
Oh my gosh. It's awful. I would not wish it on anybody. Oh man. Well, Jamie. Yeah, I mean, I'm really happy we're able to do this episode, because the awareness is necessary. And I feel like last year, although we talked about it, I think we were more focused on your journey and your process. And for those of you who are like, I want to know. Well, let's go back in the archives of According to RP. Around this SoundCloud. Time last year, SoundCloud. Around or this iTunes. Time last year. Yeah, I think iTunes would have had it too. And, you know, just, I think, yeah, around this time last year, just search for the episode and you'll hear all about Jamie's story. But I think, today I'm like, I feel like, you know, we talked more about the awareness and we talked about the statistics and the fact that lung cancer kills more Black people, right, than any other cancers. You know,
however, crazy. I will say this. Because of all of the anti-smoking campaigns and the anti-tobacco campaigns that have gone out, they've like made it, they've taken all the Newport ads out of the Black community and out of all of our Source and Jet magazines. Like it used to be in everything. There was always Newport ads everywhere.
And Black Joe the Camel. Is Joe the Camel Newport?
No. I think Camel's
a Marlboro. Or Marlboro.
Yeah, Marlboro too. Yeah. There was always, I always just associate Newport for some reason. But
because Black people always talk about Newports and the menthols.
Exactly. So it's like they've gotten rid of a lot of that advertising and a lot of that targeting marketing that they were doing in the Black community. So there's a lot less Black people who are smoking. And so those numbers are starting to level up a little bit and even out or whatever. But I mean, there's still all of these other disparities in our lives that cause us to be more predispositioned to lung cancer. You know, we have pollution that's normally typically in urban communities. You know, you have lack of access to healthcare. So people aren't going to get detected or going to get the stuff that they need because they either don't have insurance or they don't have any doctors to go to. You know, and then there's just a million different reasons and disparities between the African-American community and other communities that sets us apart and puts us in a more disadvantaged position to get something like lung cancer. So while the smoking ads have gone away, which is great, the lasting effects of everything else that has gone on in the world are still there and are still a factor. You know, so it's one of those things where you win some and you lose it on the other side too. So, you know. But it's still right now, as of right now, the numbers are still, it's disproportionately affecting African-American men and women. And ALK-positive lung cancer is happening more in the Black woman community nowadays, like healthy Black women, which is the strangest of things. There's that.
Well, with that being said, everyone... I mean, I'm really happy that we're able to talk about this and to push the awareness. And definitely, Jamie, get me that link to your, you know, to your campaign so that we can get more money for this funding, right? And for those of you out there, because I know a lot of young researchers, right, that are out there looking for the next thing, right, to research. Lung cancer, you know, and a lot of people are focused on breast cancer. They're focused on a lot of these other cancers, and they should be, right? Because there's no cure for these other things either. But lung cancer, they need your attention, right? Some of these I know a lot of young budding researchers that are looking to make impacts within the Black community. Well, here's another cancer that really needs the attention because of the lack of awareness and the lack of funding. You know, people are dying, right?
And small cell lung cancer. If you want to make an extremely big impact in a cancer community, find a breakthrough in small cell lung cancer. Because like I said earlier in the show, even though lung cancer itself is stigmatized, small cell lung cancer or squamous cell lung cancer is even more stigmatized, is like destigmatized of the stigmatized. And so there is like lung cancer funding is low. It's even lower for that one because that cancer is much more aggressive. It mutates fast as hell and it's hard. And it's really hard. So there have been there's been a fraction of as many advancements in the small cell lung cancer community as the non-small cell lung cancer community. And that's because non-small cell lung cancer has more mutations that are easily targeted, like ALK-positive, EGFR, ROS1. They're all mutations that are gene mutations. So it's a lot easier to target a gene mutation because it's, you know, you can look specifically at that gene and what causes it and all that kind of stuff. So that's why non-small cell lung cancer and these mutations are more treatable, more manageable, and you live a longer and more kind of okay life is because treatments are constantly coming out over and above the new one. But the small cell lung cancer is the one that just gets ignored because it's too hard. Like people can't figure it out, you know? So that's, if you want to make a super impact, be super smart, fix small cell lung cancer.
You got your marching orders from the Madam CEO herself, guys. All right, Jamie. Well, thank you so much for coming on and just talking a little bit about, you know, your story, but really just raising awareness. I think that we learned so much today. And I think that I think that you've given us our marching orders, right? We need to be able to help raise more awareness. This is a disease that is disproportionately affecting Black people. right? And we need to do something about it. We need to do something about it. And one way that we can is by donating to research.
Yep.
You know, it's not a scam, because people always think that, donating to research is a scam. No, you know, we need researchers to be able to get these breakthroughs, and they can't do so without funding. And so, you know, let's do what we got to do.
All that. And get screened yourself.
Yes. Get screened yourself. Jamie told you how to do it. So she told you the key word. I smoke.
I used to smoke.
I used to smoke is the key word.
They'll be like, all right, let's get you a screening then. And like, all right. You know, I'm not recommending you lie. But
nobody's
like,
saying lie, but I mean,
white
listen.
Lies. You know, you white do. Lies get to the what you need, that's all.
Do what you gotta do. Yeah. I mean, we've all at some point been around smokers though, right? So that's not a lie. It's not a lie.
But thank you so much for having me tonight. I appreciate the platform and the conversation, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. So with that being said, thank you for tuning in to another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I will talk to you guys next week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday.
I can't wait to come back.